It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 50 degrees under partly to mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they are registering southeast winds at 5 miles per hour, 66% humidity, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day and scattered showers this afternoon. High near 55 today, west winds to 15, gusting to 20. Scattered showers this evening too, at least until 10 p.m. or so. Then after 1 a.m., the real rain is likely to start up. That rain is expected to continue until 4 in the afternoon on Friday. Coming up on the Midday Report, a remembrance of Jean Bussey Peltola. And a board of the Mat-Su School District will review library books to see if they're suitable for children.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden's son, Hunter Biden, is being criminally charged. NPR's Windsor Johnston says the indictment filed in U.S. District Court in Delaware means the case could go to trial in the middle of President Biden's reelection campaign.
Federal prosecutors have indicted Hunter Biden on 3 criminal counts related to his possession of a firearm. The indictment comes after a plea deal fell apart in July between federal prosecutors and Hunter Biden's attorneys over taxes and a diversion agreement on the firearms charge. It also comes 2 days after House Republicans opened an impeachment inquiry into President Biden stemming from his son's business dealings.
NPR's Windsor Johnston. Divisions within the Republican conference reportedly resurfaced behind closed doors today. Disagreements over demands to avert a government shutdown boiled over as House Speaker Kevin McCarthy reportedly dared hard right members of the conference to try to oust him. He later told reporters, threats don't matter.
I'm going to continue to just to focus on what's the right thing to do for the American people. And you know what? If it takes a fight, I'll have a fight.
Not just a chant, but a warning from members of the United Auto Workers Union outside a Dearborn, Michigan truck plant. They, tens of thousands of their colleagues, including bargaining rep Kane Max, getting ready to go on strike against Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis if no deal is reached before midnight tonight.
They've all been talked to. They know what their assignments are. They know what gate they will be at, and they're ready to go.
The UAW says the strike for higher pay, a 4-day work week, and better protections could start at a small number of locations and expand. A prolonged standoff could lead to major disruptions among the big 3 automakers. It's also a test for President Biden, who has long described himself as strongly pro-union. The new COVID-19 vaccines have started arriving at pharmacies across the United States. NPR's Rob Stein has details.
CVS says the new shots are already available at more than 2,000 of that company's pharmacies and should be in stock at the rest by the end of the week. Other pharmacies, like Walgreens, say they're expecting to have appointments available for the new shots by next week. The new COVID vaccines target a more recent strain of Omicron than the last shots, so doctors think they'll boost people's fading immunity and help protect them from getting COVID, spreading the virus, and getting so sick they'll end up in the hospital or die. The shots could also reduce the risk for long COVID. The shots are available to anyone aged 6 months and older. Rob Stein, NPR News.
U.S. stocks have ended the day higher. The Dow closed up 331 points, nearly 1%, to settle at 34,907. This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Yesterday, Representative Mary Peltola's office announced the death of her husband, Gene Peltola Jr., who died after a plane crash Tuesday night. The National Transportation Safety Board says he was the pilot and sole occupant of a Piper Super Cub that went down west of the Yukon River village of St. Mary's at about 8:45 p.m. Peltola could always be found behind the scenes as his wife campaigned to become the first Alaska Native woman to serve in Congress. But Peltola, who is also known by his nickname Buzzy, was a trailblazer in his own right. Peltola worked for more than three decades for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Bethel, eventually becoming the first Alaska Native to oversee the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. Later, he served as regional director for the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Alaska. Through much of his career, he advocated for subsistence hunting and fishing. Lamont Albertson, one of the founders of the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, worked with Peltola to protect salmon and the region's subsistence lifestyle. Albertson says he used his power to help Alaska Natives across the state.
He was one of the first people who had a responsible position, who favored the Yupik way of doing things on the Kuskokwim River. Everybody liked him. I can't think of a single person that disliked him except the people that were above him.
Albertson says he admired Peltola because he was never afraid to speak truth to power and sometimes pushed back against federal and state wildlife managers when they made decisions that adversely affected the ability of Alaskan Natives to harvest wild foods. He said Peltola was also charming and persuasive and helped to bring about positive change in Alaska fish and wildlife management.
It's just hard to find the words to describe his intelligence and how intuitive the guy was. He was assertive and he knew how to say the right things at the right time.
Albertson believes he got some of those traits from his father, Gene Peltola Sr., a prominent Native leader who served as president of the Association of Village Council Presidents and CEO of the Yukon Kuskokwim Health Corporation. Albertson says his son Buzzy grew up understanding power and how to use it wisely and was the perfect political partner for his wife Mary. Representative Mary Peltola's chief of staff, Antone McParland, described Buzzy Peltola as a devoted family man and one of those people who was, quote, obnoxiously good at everything. He said Representative Peltola is flying back to the state to be with family and asked that people give them space to grieve in privacy. Eugene Buzzy Peltola Jr.'s fatal plane crash on Tuesday is yet another point in Alaska's grim aviation statistics. A 2021 investigation from ProPublica and Unalaska public radio station KUCB found that since 2016, 42% of U.S. deaths from small aircraft crashes occurred in Alaska. That's up from 26% in the early 2000s. Charles Wolforth is a longtime Alaska journalist and writer.
I mean, I don't think we ever really want to accept it, though, because we know that there are ways to make aviation safer.
High-profile Alaskans aren't immune, and many political figures and their loved ones have died in crashes. In 1972, a small plane carrying then-Congressman Nick Begich and then-U.S. House Majority Leader Hale Boggs, as well as a staffer and a pilot, disappeared in the Portage area. In 2010, Alaska's longest-serving U.S. Senator Ted Stevens was among five people killed when a float plane crashed north of Dillingham. He had survived a plane crash in Anchorage in 1978 that killed his first wife and four others. Wolforth says it's dangerous to say this is just the cost of doing business in Alaska and go numb.
Some of these crashes are like markers in our history. I mean, if you think about the Begich-Boggs crash, which really changed the course of history, you know, the Ted Stevens crash, again, it's just a hugely impactful event.
In 2020, State Representative Gary Knopp was among the seven people killed in a mid-air collision on the Kenai Peninsula. Wolforth says there will always be plane crashes in Alaska, but thinks this may be a good time to re-examine why Alaska has so many. A new Citizens Advisory Committee in the Mat-Su School District will review 56 library books. The books have been challenged by community members since January for indecent material. The council will hold its second meeting today. Members will discuss four books at the meeting, including The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison, and make a recommendation to the school board on whether to retain, remove, or restrict the books. The committee is deciding whether the books should be considered pornographic or harmful to minors under Alaska law. Saul Friedman is the district's lawyer. During the first meeting in August, he gave members advice on how they should interpret the statute when considering each book.
That's your purpose, to give advice to the board after considering those books in whole, their content, and the legal test that is set forth.
The committee is made up of 7 community members and 5 district staff. Previously, librarians were the first to review books that were questioned by community members. At the committee's first meeting, member Callie Ponder, who is a former teacher and has kids in the Mat-Su schools, said that process wasn't working.
We aren't just having librarians decide for a reason. We have a community effort, and there's a very specific reason for that. So we definitely don't want to just say, oh, we got to take the librarian's word for it, but with all due respect, because we're here because that didn't work.
Ponder is a founding member of Alaska's first chapter of Moms for Liberty, a parental rights advocacy group. The committee will continue meeting monthly through June. According to the American Library Association, book challenges nationwide doubled between 2021 and 2022. While a group of green thumbs in Sitka doesn't have a lease yet, the Municipal Assembly on Tuesday gave its thumbs up to a revised proposal for a community garden on public land. And although the Assembly wasn't ready to offer the group terms yet, they didn't hesitate to share some hard-won advice. KCAW's Catherine Rose has this report.
Sitka hasn't had a community garden in nearly a decade since the Blatchley Community Garden closed in 2016. Now, a group wants to bring it back in a bigger way. Supporters of the Sitka Community Garden Project see it as a step toward addressing food insecurity in the community. The project is a collaboration between the Sitka Local Foods Network and Transition Sitka, a nonprofit focused on sustainability. Planning Director Amy Ainsley described the land to the Assembly. It's uphill from the post office on Jarvis Street, next to vacant city land and land owned by the Raptor Center, as well as the proposed site for the Sitka Homeless Coalition's tiny home development. But the land doesn't come without its challenges.
We know that with some of the challenging terrain that we have in this area, and particularly with a lot of this property having muskeg, you know, it's going to take quite a bit more work to advance the design to get to the level of specifics regarding wetlands impact, drainage, site design, parking, fencing, those kinds of things. And so, you know, it's a little premature at this point to evaluate the proposal on those bases, but I think it's really helpful to kind of paint the picture of what this could look like in the future.
The garden group seeks a long-term lease of the property, and the project would be funded through government grants. The lease would help the group secure those grants. They plan to divide the lot into 51 larger plots and 15 smaller garden beds, which they would rent to local gardeners. There would be on-site water, toilets, and a teaching area. The gardens would be fenced and gated. Across the board, Assembly members were supportive of a community garden at the Jarvis Street lot. Assembly member Kevin Mosher said it was a small but necessary step.
It's not going to stop Sitka from having some sort of major problem if there's a food supply issue with transportation getting here. It's not going to solve that, but I see this as the beginning or the seed for what could be. I really believe it's a part of what Sitka needs. Food security is really, really big issue now more than ever, and I'm glad the applicants have put their heart into this.
However, Mosher wondered if they should put the lot out to competitive bid to make sure they were doing things by the book. But Assemblymember Tor Christensen didn't think so.
I don't think it needs to go to a competitive bid. I think if we did that, it would be a waste of staff time. And, you know, we would be saying we're going to put it out to a bid for a community garden. Well, there's only going to be one bid.
Christensen felt they could lease the lot to the group outright if they established that a community garden is for the greater community good. The Assembly asked the city attorney to investigate whether they would be legally in the clear to lease the lot without issuing a formal request for proposals. Mayor Steven Eisenbeiss was for the garden, but wanted to make sure that any lease allowed the city to opt out if, 20 years down the line, a better use was found for the lot. And he had some advice for the future gardeners as well.
I think it's going to be extremely important to put netting over the top of this location. I had a boat parked right across the street for a while, and all the ravens from the transfer station absolutely destroyed my seats. They pulled anything rubber off of the boat and cost quite a lot of damage. So I think it'll be important to protect the carrots and the berries from all the ravens.
Bear protection was noted as a concern, too. The garden would be located near the city's transfer station, where the scent of Sitka's garbage has historically attracted a lot of wildlife. Depending on where they land, the Assembly will either be voting on a lease or a request for proposals at a future meeting. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Hundreds of plastic waterfowl raced down the Kenai River this weekend for the annual Kenai Lions Club Rubber Duck Race. While the occasion generates funding for the organization, it also builds community. KDLL's Hunter Morrison was there and has this story.
On Saturday, a handful of spectators gathered at Cunningham Park to watch nearly 900 rubber ducks float down the Kenai River. Released upstream at a nearby boat launch, the annual fundraiser, hosted by the Kenai Lions Club, helps pay for supplies and resources that aid in the organization's mission. Founded in 1966, the Kenai Lions Club serves the Kenai Peninsula by providing community resources like vision screenings for the disadvantaged, a breakfast program at Kenai Alternative High School, and fundraisers for local families, among other initiatives. Members of the community had the opportunity to purchase a rubber duck for $20 each. The first place winner took home $6,000, while the 10 that trailed behind took home $100 each.
Well, it's a fun way of doing a raffle.
This is Dennis Swarner, the conductor and project chairman of the Kenai Lions Club Rubber Duck Race. Inspired by an annual rubber duck race that occurs in Fairbanks, Swarner was instrumental in bringing the first rubber duck race to Kenai in 1992.
Instead of reaching into a basket and pulling out a number, we reach into the river and pull out a duck. But yeah, we money we raise from this just goes back into the community.
During the first race of the day, a few dozen rubber ducks, sponsored by local businesses, face off. Generally, the first race is to test the river's current.
Business ducks are going.
After slight delays due to a pod of beluga whales at the boat launch, the 900 rubber ducks turn a bend in the river and aim for the finish line. Two boats observe the ducks to declare a winner.
If you have the ticket, the first one, yep, the $6,000 winner.
What number?
1619. Raising money can be fun. It can getting together with people and getting together as a community to reach out and help our feather friends.
Fine feathered friends
is a joy and it's awesome.
That's Sabrina McGraw, president of the Kenai Lions Club.
And it feels good to give back and help people out.
I think it's a wonderful fundraiser for our community.
Heather Rash, vice president of the Kenai Lions Club.
It's just super fun because everybody loves ducks. Everybody likes to get involved. People get excited about actually racing physical ducks down the river rather than just drawing tickets. At the middle school, we did an event and handed out duckies to the kids, and so people just get excited about it.
Although its membership number is small, the organization has made a profound impact throughout the Kenai Peninsula. They plan to continue this annual event in the future. Again, Sabrina McGraw.
The future of this event, what I hope, is that it brings the community together. They see what the Kenai Lions Club does, and they want to come in and join us and, you know, just share ideas and be together and see how we can serve more people. The more membership we have and active members we have, the more we can do.
The annual rubber duck race raised about $9,000 in total for the club. In Kenai, I'm Hunter Morrison.
Higher energy prices pushed up two economic indicators. I'm Nova Sapo with a Marketplace Minute. Retail sales rose last month by 0.6%, according to the Commerce Department. Most of that increase was from sales at gas stations, where prices surged 7% in August. Back-to-school spending also helped boost retail sales. Higher energy prices mean higher transportation costs, and that elevated wholesale prices last month. The Labor Department's Producer Price Index was up 1.6% compared to a year earlier. Wholesale prices can show where consumer prices are headed. The labor market is still resilient. The number of initial claims for jobless benefits barely moved last week, remaining at around 220,000. This indicates few layoffs. I'm Nova Sapo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Vermont Tourism. Trip ideas and planning tools available at vermontvacation.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 14th day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose at 7:37 this morning. It will set again at 8:31. That will give us 12 hours and 54 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 73 degrees set in 2018, and our record low was 35 degrees set in chilly 1972. Currently 50 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they are showing southeast winds to 5, 10 miles of visibility, 66% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for scattered showers this afternoon and mostly cloudy skies with a high near 55, west winds to 15, gusting to 20. Look for those scattered showers to continue till about 11, and then after about 2 a.m., the serious rain is expected to start in. Cloudy skies overnight with a low of 44, southwest winds to 10. That rain is expected to go on until about 5 p.m. tomorrow. Cloudy skies tomorrow, too, with a high near 55, southeast winds to 15, turning to the northwest. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 43, issued 10 a.m. September 11th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, September 12th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th, in the Inner Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Tuesday, September 12th, until 6 p.m. Thursday, September 14th, in the following area, Karlik Lagoon Exit Channel Terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Aikulik, Outer Karlik, Sturgeon, Halibut Bay sections, Central and North Cape sections, Northeast Kodiak District, East Side Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, Olga Bay sections, Northwest of Fognak, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iduit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay, Southwest of Fognak and Northeast of Fognak sections, and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the Southwest of Fognak section of the Fognak District, within 1/2 nautical miles of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Till further notice, within the Kodiak area, that portion of Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained in the purse seine fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak area salmon stat charts and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And as always, recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorded phone at 486-4559.
Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tomorrow, southwest 25 for today and tonight with 7-foot seas, southeast 20 tomorrow, becoming west in the afternoon, seas to 8 feet, and on Friday, southeast 20, becoming west in the afternoon, Friday night, northwest 20 and seas to 7 feet. For Saturday, they're calling for west winds to 30 knots and seas to 10 feet, and for Sunday, west winds to 40 knots, seas to 9 feet. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 85 miles offshore, they have a small craft advisory through Friday with southwest winds to 25 knots today and seas to 8 feet, south 25 tonight with 8-foot seas, and southeast 25 becoming westerly in the afternoon, seas to 10 feet way offshore tomorrow. for Saturday through Sunday. They're calling for west winds to 40 knots and seas to 15 feet for 15 to 85 miles offshore on our east side. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for today, southwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 6 feet with rain. For tonight, southwest 20, becoming east 10 after midnight, 6-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow, northeast 15, seas to 4 feet. For Saturday through Sunday in the Shelikof, west 30 and 7-foot seas. For inside waters, Chiniak Bay, west 15 today, becoming south late, seas to 2 feet. South 15 tonight with 2-foot seas, and east 15 becoming northwest in the afternoon tomorrow. 4-foot seas should come down to 2 feet tomorrow afternoon in Chiniak Bay. For Saturday, they are calling for west winds to 25 knots and seas to 4 feet in Chiniak Bay. Up in Marmot Bay, west winds 20 knots and seas to 4 feet today. South 10 becoming southeast 15 after midnight tonight, with seas building to 4 feet late tonight. For tomorrow in Marmot Bay, east winds to 15 knots becoming northwest in the afternoon with 4-foot seas. And on Saturday, west winds to 25 knots and seas to 6 feet. West 35 on Sunday with 7-foot seas in Marmot Bay. Tonight is the first Thirsty Thursday warm-up for training event for getting ready for Run the Rock. Meet in front of the brewery at 5:30 to get the route and run. They'll have registration forms available for Run the Rock there for you when you return. So see you there tonight at 5:30 in front of the brewery. Get your route and run. And then, assumably, you'll be running back to the brewery for some refreshment afterwards. They'll have registration forms available when you return from your run. Meetings going on in the Kodiak Island Borough include tonight's meeting of the Assembly. They're having a special meeting followed by a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30. On the 18th, the Health Facilities Advisory Board will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room at 3 p.m. on Monday. And on Tuesday the 19th, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a special meeting in the Kodiak Island Borough at the Kodiak Island Borough landfill at 5 p.m. And the Kodiak City Council will be having a regular meeting tonight. That's happening at 7:30 p.m. and will be held in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. You can also tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM, and the meeting will be live streamed. Link for that and meeting packet is available at the City of Kodiak website. And don't forget to drop by tomorrow for KMXT's annual meeting. KMXT will have a potluck and open house tomorrow starting at 5:30 p.m. And the meeting will be broadcast live starting at 6:06 p.m. So drop by the KMXT studios, say hi, and have a little food. Events going on for the Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak include tomorrow's memory screening at the Senior Center. That's going on from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. at the Senior Center tomorrow. They're free memory screenings. Call the Senior Center at 907-486-6181 to sign up. And also tomorrow from 2 to 3:30 p.m. at the Senior Center, the Dementia Caregiver Support Group will have a meet and greet, refreshments provided, and respite care and activities provided for your loved one. Again, the Dementia Caregiver Support Group, 3:30 p.m. tomorrow at the Senior Center. Also on Friday, at the Senior Center, from 4 to 6 p.m., Community Talk, Dementia Stages, Changes, and Support. That's 4 to 6 p.m. at the Senior Center tomorrow. For more information about any of this stuff, call them at the Hospice and Palliative Care at 907-512-0600. If you are interested in the Middle Ages or Renaissance, the local SCA branch is holding a newcomers event on Saturday, September 16th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the basement of the Hope Community Services. There will be rapier fencing, classes, a silent auction, period foods, and a potluck style, and more. Contact Sonia Clary for more details at M-A-I-R-G-H, Reid, R-E-A-D, at westkingdom.org. That's M-A-I-R-G-H-R-E-A-D at westkingdom.org. And please wear your best attempt at period garb. But again, that's 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the basement of Hope Community Services, Hope Community Resources on Saturday. Also on Saturday, at the Kodiak Public Library, it's the end of the summer reading celebration. It's a beach party this Saturday, rain or shine, at the library from 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday. Food, games, and the music of Ellamy Tiller. All patrons are welcome to attend. Again, it will be rain or shine, and since it's likely to be rain, it's a good activity to have on a rainy Saturday. That will be held inside. Also, September's Reading Challenge is Fall into Reading. With fewer requirements, this month-long challenge offers incentives and rewards for time well spent. Register on Beanstack, kodiak.beanstack.org. That's kodiak.beanstack.org. And September is National Library Card Sign-Up Month. If you need a library card, bring a picture ID and documentation that you live in Kodiak, and you will have access to the resources available at your public library, and they are considerable. Don't forget, Friday is also Lapsit Story Time. That's 10:30 a.m. for toddlers and their parents. And the movie Book of Life will be shown tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. This film is rated PG. Again, that movie Book of Life, tomorrow at 3:30 p.m. at the library. If you have any questions about any of the stuff, call them up at 907-486-8686. The Board of Education will be having a regular meeting on Monday. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room, number F-140 of the old high school wing. For more information, contact the Secretary to the Board of Education at 907-486-7566. And the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will be holding a meeting/tour on Monday. That meeting tour will start at 4 p.m. at the Baranoff Park office, which is at 1222 Chichinoff Street. The meeting is open to the public. For more information, call the Parks and Rec office at 907-486-8670.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.